It's time to get a job. We've gone through the process maybe a few times with some successes and many, many rejections. So we want to share some of our best practices when it comes to navigating the job scene and standing out. We hope you're ready with a pen and paper because we think these tips really work. Welcome back to Bamboo and Glass, where we share the underrepresented perspectives that shape our lifelong journey of learning and unlearning. I'm Tan.
And I'm Sophia. Thank you for joining us as we search for the right words or inspiration to start important conversations with ourselves and with loved ones. Our episodes are released every Sunday. And if you've been listening for a while, thank you so much for your support. We are on Instagram at Bamboo and Glass and always love to hear from you through our DMs or through the comments.
We're also on TikTok.
We are on TikTok. You will see some of our content there. And yeah, if you have any ideas for things you want to see from us, we would love to hear from you. So please send them our way. So in this episode, you will get a very interesting perspective because I, Sophia, have mostly looked for jobs in tech and a little bit in management consulting. And Tan has been in tech and media and entertainment. So this will be a really interesting conversation because we'll share tips that all these industries have in common and also some tips that maybe are more relevant to one than the other.
Mm-hmm. So to set the context, when do you feel like the job hunt is especially hard for you, Sophia?
When I'm trying to pivot into something new or when I feel like I'm not learning enough in my current role and I'm just going to look like an imposter when I try to apply for a different role.
Yeah, just to add to that, I think when you don't have any connections in the industry, which I think maybe goes into pivoting, but even for like college students, like you've never worked with people, how can you by any way like have a connection to someone in order to stand out in some way? So that I feel like can also be really hard because you're not hearing any like firsthand experience of how to apply for these jobs. So hopefully, given the fact that we've been working in different industries, hopefully people can glean some of these tips for whatever industry or whatever job that they're working in or looking to get work in. So first off, searching for jobs. What is your first tip when it comes to just the general job search?
Yeah, the first thing you got to do is find job listings and find openings and opportunities and just things that you can apply to. So most people know that you can search for jobs on LinkedIn, but what people don't tell you is that not all jobs are turned into official job postings. So one way you can search for these hidden roles is by searching for LinkedIn text posts. So for example, if you're interested in being a product manager on YouTube, you know, YouTube is an app that a lot of people use. Instead of just looking at the jobs tab, you can also just go to the search bar on LinkedIn in general and search posts and search the words like, for example, hiring for product manager at YouTube. And that might lead you to a LinkedIn post where someone is hiring for that role and maybe for some reason hasn't created a job description or a job posting for it yet.
I feel like that also makes a lot of sense because sometimes you, again, want to be connected to the people that are applying. And so maybe people start off by just tapping into their personal network and seeing who would be interested. But most of those are searchable to the whole public. So just by using that little hack, you may find some roles that haven't surfaced to the job postings yet.
Yes. Yeah. Also, I believe companies have to pay to have their jobs listed. And so if their job listing expires and they don't want to pay for it, or maybe there's some logistical reason that makes it hard for them, or maybe there's some rules about how long a job posting can be up, then you don't want to miss out on those jobs just because there's not an official posting for it.
Yes. Tip number two, it has to do with filtering. So whether this is looking on those posts or looking on the actual job listings themselves, you want to filter by last 24 hours up to a week so that you are one of the earlier applicants. Sometimes you'll see posts that are from like 2 months ago at that point. And if you can pretty quickly assume, especially if they're a name brand company, that they've had hundreds of applications that they're going through. And the main reason that they probably have it up is because they haven't quite yet offered, given out an offer letter to someone, but are deep in the interview process.
And another kind of less savory fact is that a lot of companies have a rule where especially in roles where it's more dominated by a particular identity. For example, there are a lot more men who are software engineers than women. There might be a rule where the company has to interview a certain number of women or people of color before they can close the job posting. So it's possible that they already have someone in mind and they're just continuing to interview other people just to follow that rule. So to avoid being that person who's taken advantage of by the company, try to go for roles that are fresher and newer so you can be one of the first.
Definitely. That leads us to tip number three when it comes to, you know, comparing yourself to other people. Don't be intimidated if you see that little tagline next to the apply button of 30 people have already applied, because that's actually calculated by the number of people who click the apply button on LinkedIn, and it's not actually the number of people who submit an application. There's just no way LinkedIn can know if you've actually gone into the other job portal and submitted the full application. And so because of that, you actually may be seeing conflated numbers that are inflated a little bit. So it might actually be much less than 30 and people just have been sitting on the application. So
you definitely want to think,
you want to go for it. You want to think about the speed so that you are at the top of the pile and are really quickly recognizable for the skills that you have. Because likely there are people who have similar experiences and similar skill levels, and it's just about timing at that point.
And sometimes if you're one of the first to apply, one downside could be it could take a little bit of time for you to hear back from the team. And this is because there's also some companies have rules where they have to have the job posting up for 2 weeks or so before they can actually start looking at resumes. So just because you haven't heard back doesn't mean that people don't like you. It's still helpful to have your application out as one of the first ones, because that gets you in the front of the line for when they start actually going through the applications.
So now we're moving into sending in the application itself. So tip number four is, when in doubt, send in a cover letter. You want to set your...
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah. So I think this is especially true if you're pivoting into a new industry, because off the bat, you don't have role titles that are relevant to the industry you're entering. And so the cover letter is your kind of like personal statement. It's your chance to, you know, share and showcase how you've been able to connect the dots from the work that you've done in a previous industry and how that can actually be applied into this new industry that you're entering. And so you can't really always do that in the resume because you just have limited space to be sharing when you are talking about numbers that you've achieved on the jobs and the roles that you've done. And so the cover letter can speak a little bit to more of the human side and really appeal to people. I feel like I've been complimented a lot on my cover letters, especially when I haven't worked in that industry or that role before. And so people will say that, oh, your cover letter is actually really interesting. And so I just wanted to get a chance to talk to you, even though you don't have the particular experience that we would have been looking for. And so it just sets you up so that you can go into an interview and have the chance to do the interview.
Totally.
In case you are worried about time-sensitive submissions, because earlier we just said you want to be one of the earlier applications, and a cover letter can be really hard to write. One, it doesn't have to be long. It can just be, what would you say, Sophia? It can be like what
three
you write in
sentences.
A LinkedIn message and just putting it into the PDF. Or you can also create a template that works well for the industry you're applying to and speaks to your skills and experience. So once I make a template of a cover letter about being a software engineer, I can probably tweak, you know, a couple of things here and there, like switch out the names of the company and whatnot. But pretty much you have a template that you can just quickly fill in and send off as soon as you can.
Yeah, that's great. So similar to writing a cover letter, another thing that you would have to put together is a resume. So what are some of your tips for writing a resume?
I think the best general advice that I can give is to use action words. I don't ever want to see someone put worked with four people, worked on this project. Like, work doesn't really tell you anything. Your eye just kind of drifts off once you get past the first couple words. And people say that recruiters only spend like 10 seconds on each resume. So you want to, don't be afraid to use some of the flashy words in order to talk about and celebrate the accomplishments you have. So instead of saying, led a project, you can say spearheaded a project and talk a little bit more in depth about the details following those first couple words.
Yeah. And recruiters have actually proactively complimented me for me bolding keywords in my resume. So if you look at the job description and you see like they care about someone who's built mobile apps or web apps or who's worked on consumer products, okay, go in your resume and highlight those words so mm-hmm. that people can see those very easily. So that was mm-hmm. tip number six. Awesome. Tip number seven is about getting the attention of the recruiter. So why is this important? The recruiter is the person who is screening resumes and recommending resumes for the hiring manager to take a closer look at. And so the faster you get on the radar of the recruiter, the faster they will consider you and you'll get to interview and beat out the competition. So there are two ways to get the attention of a recruiter and to even find who the recruiter is for that job. The first idea is to, again, go on LinkedIn and search for posts announcing the role. So sometimes the recruiter or the hiring manager or someone on the team will want to advertise the role. And so they'll write a LinkedIn post saying, hey, I'm hiring, or like my manager or my friend is hiring for a product manager at YouTube. And so if you search those keywords, like hiring for blank role at blank company, that might lead you to a post by the recruiter or hiring manager. And so, boom, you found them. You found that recruiter and that hiring manager. And so you can then message them on LinkedIn and get that personal connection, like you were saying, Tan. Another way is if you have LinkedIn Premium, the job posting will sometimes include the name of the recruiter or the hiring manager. And so that's another way to find their name.
Nice. I think a cynical way you could think about, you know, messaging the recruiter after you've already sent in the application is actually that, oh, am I bothering the recruiter too much? Or are they going to think I'm annoying because I'm sending them multiple messages on different platforms? The thing is, they'll recognize your name and maybe they'll think like, oh, I want to see what this person is all about because they've already messaged me like mm-hmm. 5 times on 5 different platforms. And maybe they'll actually be wowed by the resume and the cover letter that you wrote. So you can actually take advantage of that little pestering that you're doing to message them.
And there have been recruiters who have, again, proactively complimented me for reaching out to them on LinkedIn because they said, oh, I interpreted that as you being very passionate and interested in this role. Because, you know, recruiters, they talk to, you know, you might feel like, oh my gosh, I really want this job. Everyone else is so qualified and interested. You know, there are a lot of people that a recruiter reaches out to who are just like very boring and unengaging to talk to. So seeing your interests could be a really bright moment in their day.
Yeah. And on the flip side, if it helps people's perspectives, is that I've gotten reached out to recruiters a lot, especially when I was working full time as a software engineer. And so recruiters are also kind of doing that outreach themselves a lot of the time. And so I don't think they would actually be that bothered to hear from someone who actually is very interested and proactively looking for that job.
Mm-hmm. Totally. All right. So what if you can't find the recruiter, or maybe you don't want to talk to the recruiter for some reason? Is there a way to get the attention of someone else at the company? Tip number eight is the 15-minute chat hack. So if you've ever used like Google Calendar or Teams calendar or something, you'll notice that the default block is 30 minutes. And so people, if they have a free block of time on their calendar, it probably will be 30 minutes. And 30 minutes sounds like quite a bit of time, right? You could have a full meeting, you could have a full one-on-one or a discussion with someone in 30 minutes. But 15 minutes, I mean, that's really quick. That's just like 5 minutes, 5 minutes, and 5 minutes, right? Mm-hmm. And so I've noticed that when people reach out to me asking for like advice, or if they just want a quick chat for 15 minutes, I'm like, oh yeah, I totally have a block of time. That's 15 minutes. In fact, I have 30, right? And so if that conversation, first of all, that lowers the barrier for me to say yes to the conversation. And once I say yes to the conversation and we're talking, if I really enjoy talking to you, I will not mind extending the conversation from 15 minutes to 30 minutes. And there's a really polite way you can say it. You can say like, hey, I know our time is up and I want to be mindful of your time. I have one last question for you. And at that moment, that's when the person you're connecting with might actually say, oh, actually, I have 15 more minutes. Let's just keep chatting, right? Mm-hmm. And at the end, if you want to ask them to give you a referral or help you along a little bit more in the process, but maybe you feel a little bit shy to ask directly for a referral, what you can say instead is there anything you can do to help the hiring team notice my application? So you can see that with this phrasing, it's clever because you're asking them for help, but it's not too on the nose in case you don't feel confident directly asking for a referral.
Mm-hmm. I love this tip. I think the 15-minute hack is so important, especially when everyone's been working remotely and we're tired of being on screens a lot of the time. Okay, so we talked a lot about how to kind of get noticed, how to go about searching for these jobs and sending in the application itself. Now, let's move on to interviews. At this point, yay, you got the interview. You are able to you get to talk one-on-one with the recruiter or the hiring manager or another interviewer. So let's talk about how you can figure out what experiences and skills to highlight. So what is tip number 9?
Tip number 9 is to think of the recruiter as your ally and get hints and tips from them. So the recruiter is your friend in that they want to fill this role ASAP because they don't want to spend time looking through candidates and they don't want the team to spend time interviewing candidate after candidate, right? They just want to find the right person really quickly. So they're on your side. So you can ask them, what has been the hardest part of finding the best candidate for this role? Especially if you're someone pivoting into a new industry, you might have a lot of experiences and not know what's the most relevant or interesting. Mm. But if you ask this question, that's a shortcut to you knowing what to prepare and what to highlight. And this has actually been the game changer for a lot of my interviews. There was a company that said, we really want candidates who are fluent in a certain language or who have worked on a certain type of device. Like, I really want someone with Android experience. Boom, that's just a win-win because now I know to highlight that and the team is excited because they're finally meeting someone with that particular skill.
That's really helpful because a lot of times in job postings, you'll still see like a long list of responsibilities or qualifications, but which ones are the most important, you don't quite know. And so just by directly asking that question, it kind of gives you a sense of like, okay, here's the answer that I want to give in this limited time that I have with the recruiter.
Right. And also, job descriptions are not very accurate because sometimes teams just cobble them together and, you know, copy paste.
It's like the standard application, standard job posting.
Mm-hmm. And other times, a company might be exploring a new venture or a new area and really value skills in that area, but they don't want to put it in their job description because they don't want their competitors to know that they're looking into this new area. So for example, like if a company wants to expand their product to Latin America, they might really care about candidates who are fluent in Spanish, but they might not put that in a job description because they don't want their competitors to know that they're expanding to Latin America.
Yes. Tip number 10 has to do with if they send you an agenda with the names of the interviewers that you're going to be talking to, don't be afraid to search them on LinkedIn and Google. You may find something that you can subtly speak to that they would resonate with. So one example is if you find out that someone pivoted between a lot of different teams at the company that you're interested in interviewing at, maybe when they're introducing themselves, they'll bring up that context. But you can have already prepared a question for them to ask them like, oh, kind of like, this is what I know about this area, which was a previous team that you worked on. What kind of led you to join this new team, given the fact that it was different? Another example is if you happen to know that they are very passionate about Asian American identity, you can kind of speak to that, even though it may not seem very relevant to the immediate work that you're doing. It can still give you some relatability because, of course, one, you don't want to assume that any Asian interviewer is interested in Asian American identity. But if it is something that they're passionate about, then they know that that's something that they would be more than happy to talk to you about, even outside of the interview.
Yeah, and that personal connection, especially if it's something that's happening at the beginning of the interview or even at the end, it's just a great rapport building moment. And it shows that you did your research.
Yes.
All right. Tip number 11. You're probably going to get a lot of questions about like, why do you want to join this company? Or like, why are you interested in this role? Or even like, tell me about yourself. So what is a good way to structure those answers and those stories? So at the end of the day, what the company really cares about is that you can solve the challenges that they're facing, the business problems that they're facing. So tip number 11 is to storytell your accomplishments and to explain why they're relevant to the team that you want to join. So for example, let's say you have an accomplishment where you grew your team very quickly. You hired a bunch of people onto your team. That's a great skill. Instead of just saying, I'm really qualified because I grew my team from 15 to 30 people. You should start by saying, hey, the recruiter mentioned that your team is looking to double in size. There are a lot of challenges involved, like scaling process and scaling culture. And I've tackled these challenges since I also grew my team, you know, I also doubled my team in my current role. And this is helpful because you're, you know, especially for product management interviews, they always ask you like, oh, you need to be like empathetic to your user and your customer, right? This is you being empathetic to the job, empathetic to the hiring team. You are doing your homework about what they need and explaining how you can plug in and help them out.
Awesome. Of course, like with the interview process, the interview types can look very different across industries, but I feel like the most standard is definitely the behavioral interview. Do you have a tip around just shining in that area of the interview?
Yes. Yeah. So with behavioral interviews, they can be challenging because people of all different levels and experience and years of experience might get asked the same question. Like, tell me about a time when you resolved a conflict, or tell me about a time when you had to take a new approach to a problem. And so you might think, how am I supposed to shine in these interview questions if everyone, regardless of their level of seniority, if everyone's getting the same question? And so the key here is to give like a senior level answer, or like the level of the role that you're going for. So one way to do that is, you know, just like in your resume, you have to quantify the scope of your role. Like, how many people were you leading? How many teams were you aligning? What amount of revenue did you bring in? How many months of delay were at stake if you didn't step in and solve the problem, right? Like, if you just quantify the scope of the problem and the scope of your influence over your team, that can really convey your seniority and your experience. And one way you can practice answering these questions is to take any question, like, tell me about a conflict you resolved, and practice giving an answer that's like, tell me about the most challenging conflict you resolved. Don't just pick any random conflict you resolved. Like, you want to really highlight what was the most challenging conflict that you resolved, because otherwise you risk coming off as like, okay, this person has 10 years of experience, but the conflict they mentioned is like something I would expect someone with 2 years of experience to resolve.
Yeah, yeah.
So don't fall in that trap.
And also, what if they ask you actually the most challenging conflict you resolved and you don't have your answer prepared? It's better to prepare the most challenging thing, because you're either going to meet the expectation of that question or you're going to exceed their expectations.
Yes, totally.
My personal favorite is standing out in the questions you ask at the end of the interview. So a lot of times interviewers will allow like 5 to 10 minutes at the end to give you time to ask them any questions, because it's your time to get some insider scoop into the company or into the team or into their work life. If you're not sure if you're going to get that chance, you can ask at the beginning, like, hey, I'm just wondering if there's going to be some like 5 minutes at the end to ask you a couple questions. I have some questions in mind that I would really love to get your thoughts on. I think that's a really great way to, you know, set the expectation that you are very curious, and also kind of shows them that you are passionate about it. So tip number 13 is, well, asking the question, what's the biggest challenge that you or the company or the team is currently tackling? I feel like, especially if this is a name brand company that you're applying for, obviously everyone knows about the accomplishments that they have and the things that they've done really well. But I think something that is oftentimes a more unique answer that you'll receive is asking them about the biggest challenge. It may be things that you don't hear about in the news. It may not be things that you even hear about from someone that you know at the company that isn't on this team. And so sometimes just being able to ask them that question shows that you really do care about the challenges that they're tackling. So if you don't know yet, you can ask them at the end of the interview. Number 14 is, how would you describe the culture of blank? So I take this opportunity for it to be me interviewing the person or the company or the team. I care a lot about the culture, and I'm sure a lot of you out there care a lot about the types of people you were going to work with. And so asking this question is nice because it's probably a little bit different from the questions that you've been fielding throughout the interview, but it's a chance to kind of humanize the team a little bit and recognize the fact that you are working with people and you want to know if that you're going to mesh well with them or not. And so oftentimes people will talk about how important culture is, but you don't really know what kind of culture that they want to foster. So asking them to put into their own words what the culture of the team is like, that can really help you better understand what kind of personality they would be looking for too.
Yeah, I have a couple more ideas for questions about culture. When you're talking with a hiring manager, you can ask, what is an example of feedback you received that you implemented versus feedback that you didn't implement? That can help you tell, like, what's the line between something that feedback that they take really seriously and think they need the action on versus feedback that they maybe deprioritize.
That's great.
Another thing you can ask is, what separates a good, you know, software engineer or product manager or designer from a great one? And what does it take to be a great blank? And I think that helps you understand, like, what is that one skill that really lets people take their career to the next level? Is it like showing up and doing a lot of presentations? Is it having a lot of like complex, you know, partnerships with other teams. It just really help you understand like what it takes to like be at the next level.
Gotcha. Awesome. Tip number 15 still has to do with questions, but questions to avoid. So I would really avoid spending that time in the interview asking them questions about what the logistics of the interview process or about the hiring process. That's something that you would want to ask the recruiter, if anything. Mm. And I would also avoid asking controversial questions unless they bring it up themselves. So for example, I heard about this scandal at the company. How is it affecting you? That's more for the tabloids than you learning about their experience, even though you may think that this shows that you are very in tune with what's going on at the company. Sometimes that's not something that people would feel comfortable bringing up in a conversation.
It feels kind of gossipy.
I would definitely avoid asking those questions unless they happen to bring up themselves. Like, you probably have heard, but this has been something that the company has been going through. And if they kind of refer to it that way, you can lightly ask at the end, hey, like you mentioned about this, and I kind of knew about this through the news outlets. How is that particularly affecting your team and the roadmap that you have? I think that's a more appropriate way you could bring up something controversial like that.
Cool. So that takes us all the way through the interviews. Congrats for getting through the interviews. Take a deep breath. You're done. All right. What are some tips for ways to stand out after the interview?
Tip number 16, follow up with an email to the interviewer thanking them for their time. Make sure that you're gracious, not overbearing, and let them know that you can send over any other materials in case, and just let them know that there is that option, and also wish them luck. Again, I think the main key in this communication is to recognize that they are a human who's taking time out of their day to talk to a potential teammate, someone that may be learning under them most of the time, and you just want to make sure that they are left with a good impression of you, especially if you're not too sure if they left with a good impression.
Yeah, that's great. So you probably are very eager to hear back. How soon should you follow up to ask for an update? I'm curious what your perspective is on this, because I've had recruiters get back to me between 2 days and like 2 weeks.
Yeah.
So what is your tip here?
I would say like a week and a half to 2 weeks. I think it really depends on what day of the week even you had this interview. But in general, I would say at most 2 weeks from the interview is my personal sweet spot, mainly because they are probably interviewing a lot of other candidates. And depending on the time frame that they have, maybe they just don't want to reach out about the next steps until they've done all those interviews. But also, once you do ask and follow up after like the week and a half and 2 weeks, I think you can then explicitly ask when you should expect to hear an update from them. That way they give you a baseline of when to hear back. And from there on out, I can continue to follow up at that cadence. So let's say they say, it'll take us about a week to gather our materials and follow up with you about next steps and what the status of your application is. If I don't hear back from them in a week, I follow up again. And then if I still don't hear back, I follow up again in a week. What about you?
Yeah, I think that that's very reasonable and aligned with my experience too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't think waiting 2 weeks is going to make you seem like you're not interested, especially if you've already sent a follow-up email to the interview immediately after the interview.
Totally. Cool. Well, the last thing I just want to say is that job searching is a roller coaster of an experience. There are highs and lows, and you just never know when you're going to hear good news or bad news. So keep at it. We've all been through the highs and the lows, and there are so many factors beyond your control that companies just sometimes like legally can't disclose to you. Like, you know, sometimes they interviewed you just out of courtesy because they needed to interview a person of color before they went with their other candidate, you know, just like things like that they would never tell you. So don't take it too personally.
Yes. And a phrase that I've heard recently that kind of comforts me is the phrase rejection means redirection. And so just remember that a rejection is giving you an opportunity to look in a different direction for other opportunities that may actually be a better fit for you that you just didn't happen to see at the time. And so I know that's not always comforting, but hopefully that's one silver lining you can kind of take away. If you are experiencing rejections, there will be a time when there is an acceptance. It's inevitable. You can't get rejected for your whole life for everything. You will experience a win at some point. So I want to end with sharing some episodes from Bamboo and Glass that we want to recommend. We have a whole series of people who have gone through career changes. And so if you are someone who happens to be pivoting between industries, we'll link all of those in the episode description so that you can check them out and just see maybe there's someone who's in an industry that you are interested in or have been coming from, and you can hear their perspectives. And the last episode I recommend is episode 82, Telling Your Story in Interviews, featuring Karen. This one is more of a medical school interview process, but still, she has some really great tips on how to stand out in interviews that you can take with you in your job hunt.
Yay! So thank you for tuning in. I hope these tips were encouraging and practical. Hope you were taking some notes. Please think of a friend who might benefit from this encouragement and advice and share it with them. Let them know that we are on every podcasting platform, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, literally any platform you can think of, so you can find us anywhere. And thank you again for tuning in, and we're excited to chat with you again next Sunday.
Bye! Bye.